Vectis Radio. Vectis Radio. FM 104.6. Bringing the island's community together.
The Mid-Morning Show is proudly sponsored by PC Consultants, the island's leading provider of IT service, consultancy and support to businesses, public sector and private clients across the island. PC Consultants, an award-winning company celebrating 25 years in business.
Welcome to Thursday's lunchtime social discussion. We have three guests in the studio from the Isle of Wight Council, and we're going to be talking about fostering and adoption as well in this hour of the show. And first of all, we've got Ashley. Just moving close to that microphone, Ashley, and tell us who you are and what your job title is.
Good afternoon. My name is Ashley Schofield. My role within Children's Services is the Assistant Team Manager of the fostering team. I've been a part of the council now for coming on 5 to 6 years.
Okay, if you get round the front of that microphone, that'll be much easier for us, and then we'll be able to hear you nice and clear as well. So you've been with the council for 6 years?
Five, six, coming on six.
Okay, and we've got Debbie Harry over there as well. Debbie, the one from the 1970s, not how she looks now. So can you just introduce yourself there, madam?
Yeah, my name's Valerie Marsek. I'm a fostering practitioner in the fostering team, the Isle of Wight Council. I've worked for fostering for 15 years.
Okay, 15 years. So you got a bit more experience than old Beardy over there.
Yes, that's true.
Do you pull rank?
I try to, but it doesn't always work.
Oh, right. Who makes the coffee in your office?
He does.
He does, yeah, sure. Okay, we've got Lucy on the end. And Lucy, what do you do?
Yeah, so my name's Lucy Matthews, and I'm an adoption social worker. So I share an office with this gang, but I sit in a slightly different team.
Okay.
I've worked for children's services for about 15 years now, but specifically within adoption for about 7.
Why do you choose that job then? Because you could probably do anything you wanted to, couldn't you?
I just think I get the opportunity to work with such an awesome team who are really committed to children, and at the end of the day, that's what it's about. It's about the kids.
Okay, which is, you know, if I was out there listening to that, what you just said there, I'm thinking, right, it's in safe hands then.
Definitely, okay. I think so. I think we've got a great team here on the island.
How do you feel about that, Ashley? Are you...
Absolutely, I think we've got an exceptional team, both across the fostering and adoption teams, and across all of the children's services, actually. I think there's been huge improvements that have been made to the delivery of services, which I think we'll probably get into a little bit more later on, but it's also been picked up by Ofsted in their latest inspection, and we're now recognised good as a local authority. So,
do you get the full amount of support that you should get? Because I know there's been a lot of cutbacks and things like that. Are you finding that tough, or is... are you dealing with it?
I think every local authority will be finding the cuts difficult. I think that's needless to say. But, I mean, in terms of the support, we've always got readily available service managers and senior managers who are able to kind of share their oversight and guidance into the tasks that we do to actually make sure that the jobs we're doing to the best of our abilities, and ultimately we're providing a good service for the children of the island.
Okay, I've got loads of questions and we've got plenty of time to sort of ask them, I guess, but I bet we'll get to the end of it and you'll say, oh, we haven't done this, we haven't talked about that, so I'm hoping that you will come back. Because it's fostering and adoption, it is different, but you share the same office. Do you have days when there's a crossover with roles? I'm guessing, for instance, if you're checking people out, you're doing the same kind of checks, on people.
We are to some extent. There's definitely some mirroring between the two services, except that when people apply for fostering and when people apply for adoption, they apply for those specific services. So the adoption team will do the checks on anyone who applies to become an adopter, and the fostering service will do the checks on anyone who applies to do the fostering service.
Okay, look, a couple of years ago, we talked about this off air. I say a couple of years ago. It must have been about 16, 17 years ago. There was a family that I used to know, and they were in the process of trying to adopt, and it was taking so long.
Yeah.
And in the end, I think they lost interest. They got divorced in the end as well, which, okay. You kind of look at it and you think, well, positively, you didn't adopt or you fostered before you got divorced, so you probably weren't right in the first place. But how long does it take now?
So for adoption, I'll leave these two to answer for the fostering, but the adoption process would be a two-stage process. So the initial stage is about 2 months, where we do criminal records checks, that kind of thing, and talk to you about the process, make sure you fully understand what it is that you're embarking on. That's about 2 months. And then you do something called a home study assessment, which takes a further 4 months, which is essentially a social worker really getting to know you, getting to know your family, getting to know where your skills and strengths lie, so that we can present you to the adoption panel at the end of that process, who then ultimately approve your suitability to adopt. So that's about 6 months. When you're talking about 16 or so years ago, the assessment process was much more open-ended for adoption, and you're quite right, people did fall by the wayside because the process seemed never-ending. The government brought in new changes not so long ago, really, just a few years ago, that really streamlined that service. So now we're able to get people from initial inquiry right through to approval for adoption within 6 months. After that, then, it's the matching process to a child, which can take longer or shorter, depending on, you know, your skill set, really.
So 2 months, that's quite short.
For that initial stage is 2 months. And so altogether, from initial inquiry through to approval, should be about 6 months.
And is it the same for fostering as well?
It is very similar. There are a lot of kind of crossovers in terms of the kinds of checks that we have to do for people who want to either adopt or foster. Again, similar to the adoption assessment, ours will take around 6 months to complete, but we will always try to endeavour to get that completed sooner. But sometimes it's kind of waiting on other checks coming back from other local authorities, particularly families if they've had to move around. We have to get all of this information back before we're able to present it before a fostering panel.
I know it's probably going to sound a stupid question, and I probably know the answer, but what is the difference between fostering and adoption? And more importantly, if you've fostered somebody for some time, when does that become adoption?
Lucy, did you want to talk about, in terms of the differences from your perspective on adoption?
Yeah, absolutely. So adoption is about taking a child into your home, into your family, and they become your child as if they had been born to you. So it's a permanent family arrangement. Fostering is slightly different in that they retain their family of origin, their birth family, and are cared for outside of that family. So that's really where the two services are different.
Is there any time when, and I don't know whether you can tell me this or not, but I'll ask it anyway, is there a time when, just say for instance, you start off by fostering somebody that leads into an adoption?
That does happen occasionally, but typically that would be based on the needs of the child. So if a child was in long-term foster care and a court agreed that adoption was appropriate, then we might look at that, but that would be entirely based on what was in the best interest of that particular child, so it's on a case-by-case basis. But some children, that's the right plan. For other children, it's more about remaining in long-term foster care with those connections to birth family, because adoption would potentially sever connections to birth family.
Okay. Oh, I think we asked this off air earlier on, but what are the numbers, you know, on the island? How many people are being adopted? How many people are being fostered? Is it roughly the same? Is there a huge need?
No, I mean, the numbers are different, but I mean, both services have a great need in terms of we need adopters coming forward. There's more children that are looking for forever families than we have actual prospective adopters waiting to be able to match them to. And it's the same with fostering. So we've got, I mean, currently at the moment, if I give you some of the statistics, we currently have...
He's come prepared.
I've come prepared. I have indeed. So we have like 91 fostering households, but in terms of like the total number of children in care, we have currently 244 children that are currently looked after by the local authority. So the demand outstrips the supply in that sense, and that has been a trend that's been seen nationally, not just on the Isle of Wight, where we've got fewer fostering households looking after a greater number of children.
How do we compare the number wise to, you know, other parts of the country? Because that sounds like, you know, in some ways it's too many, you know, and that's not a dig at you, it's just, you know, it's like how many kids, it doesn't matter, if it's one, it's too many, isn't it? But 245 sounds a bit high. How do we compare?
So in terms of comparing with neighbouring authorities, we are statistically higher In terms of the ratio of children per 100,000 in the population. However, we are also statistically higher in terms of the rates of poverty and deprivation. So actually, whilst we do have higher numbers of children in care, when you compare that with the actual higher rates of poverty, there is a clear correlation with actually families and areas of deprivation and higher rates of children being looked after.
Do you think, I mean, I look at it and I think, right, we're a community. Can we help? Yeah. Okay. Well, let's do so. If there's one thing that happens today in this hour, we make people more aware of what's going on. We make more aware of how people can help if they want to. You know, whether it's a adoption or fostering. You know, there'll be people out there that I would imagine that have thought about it, but don't know too much about it and don't know where to go. So what would they do? What's your first bit of advice for them?
Well, first bit of advice is if you've been thinking about fostering, whether it's been loosely or you've kind of had brief discussions with your family, the first thing would be to pick up the phone and give us a call, because there are a lot of myths out there surrounding actually, well, yeah, we've thought about it, but would we be suitable to foster or not? And haven't taken it further. But so my first step would be to say, look, pick up the phone into one of our teams, express your interest, and actually we can take an initial inquiry. We can cover all of the different, you know, the myths that are out there to actually say, actually look at your personal circumstances. Would it be right for you at this moment in time? And look to progress it that way.
What's the telephone number then?
The telephone number is 01983 823 160.
And that gets you straight through to your
That
department.
Comes straight through to the fostering team, yeah.
That's you better give your number out in a minute, because otherwise
I'm itching
to
give my number out.
That's
absolutely
not fair otherwise. Go on, give us your number as well.
So if you're interested in adoption, you can speak to our awesome friendly team on 01983 823 081.
Do you have to be married?
No, not at all. You can be a single person, or you can be in a relationship, or you can be married.
So you can be single as well?
You absolutely can for adoption, yes.
Has that changed over the years?
I don't think the law has changed, but definitely as a society we've all moved on, haven't we? And
sure.
So it's much more common to grow up in a single parent family these days, isn't it? And so I think adoption has just reflected societal norms, really, and we get a lot more single carers come through than you might imagine.
Excellent. And that's for both?
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult question, because there's no simple answer to say who can and who can't foster or adopt, and it's all down to the personal circumstances of each family. But I mean, I'd give you a shorter list of factors which would probably exclude somebody from actually progressing their interests. So things like, actually, to foster in England, you do need to be over the age of 21. You have to be ready and available to look after a child, so you have to have the space and capacity logistically in your home and things like that. So there are other certain factors which would prevent someone from progressing their interest in fostering, such as if they've got specific convictions, and that's also really related to offences against children. So if somebody has got a specific offence, particularly against a child, then they wouldn't be able to progress their
okay.
interest in fostering.
So if you've got a drink driving conviction, would that stop you? Would that, you know, if, even if it was just,
no.
Even if you've like been banned from driving in the last 12 months?
You'd have to look at the person's character,
right,
and what the circumstances were around that conviction. If it was in the last 12 months, we'd probably ask you to wait a bit longer, particularly for adoption, because we would want to see, you know, that was an isolated event in your life, and that you're of good moral character. You're going to be raising a very vulnerable child, and we would need to be confident in you. But, you know, if you're in your 40s now and you had a bit of a shoplifting experience when you were 15, we can understand that you were a teenager at the time and you've made different life choices since, but we're very happy to talk through each individual circumstance and go from there, really.
Okay, I just want to point out at this stage that I haven't been done for shoplifting.
Have you not?
No. Well, I thought I'd better point that out. How old can you be? Sorry, these questions are just coming from my head, which is probably a good thing. How old should you be, or how old is there an age that you can be adopted? Is there a cut-off point where you think, well, you're actually too old to be adopted?
Do you mean the child or the grown-up?
Yeah, the child.
Oh,
yeah.
The child. Okay, yeah. So technically, you have to be under 18. We are seeing, typically, most children who are placed for adoption are under 5, but that's not strictly. We're always looking for prospective families who would adopt an older child. There's no maximum age.
All right. So if you just, for instance, a 13-year-old, you know, they were up for adoption, you'd adopt rather than foster.
It would depend on the circumstances of that particular child.
Who gets to decide that?
The court does.
Do you worry about that, those court people? Because you're probably more, you know, when you think about it, you're rubbing shoulders with people, you're talking to people all the time. Who are these court people? Are they trained? You know, are they just presented with a load of facts and then they make a difference? And that must get frustrating for you. And I know you can't even answer that question, can you?
I think the courts are staffed by some very experienced judges, and we have an expert legal team. Families are really represented by our awesome lawyers and solicitors on the island, and there's a whole range of experts, and lots of goes into court proceedings. So it's unusual for us to disagree with an outcome made in court, in fairness.
Do they act on your recommendations?
They look at a child situation holistically from every perspective, because we have to bear in mind that whilst the local authority may have a view on a child's circumstances, you know, birth families and other relatives and the children themselves have a say as well, and that's all taken into account.
Okay, so you got how many? You say 250 odd?
244 children currently in care. Yeah,
that's. I mean, if we take a time to just think about that. That's. Putting it a different way, you've got 245 in care. Does that mean like they're not actually being fostered or they're...
So that's 244. That includes children who may be subject to a full care order. So the local authority has parental responsibility, but they may well be placed with a parent. So this is there's a proportion of that number who actually are still living with parents or within their family, extended family members.
Okay, and it is that... I'm guessing that... You work with them and so on to try and put things back on track.
Absolutely. I mean, there is a stigma around children's services still, and I think that there's a lot of work that has been done to help try and dispel that. However, the focus of all children's social workers is to try and keep children within their immediate families. So wherever possible, we are looking to help parents get through work through those difficulties that they might be going through, whether it be illness, whether it be any form of addiction, whether it be relationship-based. We will always look to try and help with the issues and address those that would mean actually that child can remain with their parents.
Okay, I'm glad you brought it up, because I think it is a bit of a myth, isn't it? We all sort of say, oh yeah, blooming social workers and all that. We've all got that kind of opinion, and that's why I kind of wanted you guys to come in and dispel those myths, because half the time we moan and we groan about something we don't know nothing about. So, you know, the reasons why you're going to take someone away from somebody is not just just so that you can. It's because it's always in the best interest of the child.
Absolutely, yeah. Wherever possible, so what I said earlier, wherever possible, we will always look to try and keep that child looked after by their parents. It's only in the circumstances where actually it's not safe for them to remain in the care of their parents that we have to kind of consider alternative carers to be looking after them.
Okay, your boss wants to say a word.
I just wanted to say there's many different types of fostering, and we try and cater for all children because all children have different needs. But one of our main things is to make children go back to their... help assist children to go back to their homes if possible. But as Ashley just said, it's about the safety of the child.
Yeah.
But that is usually social workers' priority number one. You know, let's work with the families, get them back in there.
Sure.
And we all work together at that aim. I think it's fair to say that we really try hard to keep island children on the island, and that's another one of our aims as well.
That must be difficult as well. You highlight the point there, which is interesting. Yes, I totally agree with what you're saying. But does there come a time when, hang on a minute, we haven't got, you know, there's not enough people to foster, there's not enough people to adopt, so you have to go on the mainland?
Sadly, that does happen, unfortunately. We do have a really good recruiting now, and we're getting a lot of initials in, and we hope to have many more foster carers on the Isle of Wight so we can provide homes here. But yes, unfortunately, sometimes they do have to go to the mainland.
Do you have like sessions where you say, right, we're having an open day, if you want to come down and find out about it?
Absolutely, and I think we've got some open days coming now soon, haven't we, Ashley?
Yeah,
please tell us about them, Ashley.
And we actually have foster carers there, so they can actually speak to a real live foster carer rather than members of staff. And our foster carers assist in a lot of training and lots of things like that, so that they're involved. We're one big professional.
Good. So there's a chap that I won't name because I can't and I don't want to, and because I don't want to get him into trouble. Phoned me a little while ago. He used to go to school with this chap, and he phoned me a little while ago and said, "You got someone on the four-piece course that I'm in the process of fostering." And I looked at him and I thought, "I didn't know you fostered." I'm guessing they can't shout about it too much because obviously you have to protect the child and so on and so forth. Mm. But the one good thing that came out of that was I found out a little bit more about it. And if other people want to know more, I can kind of put them on to other people and so on and so forth. So just by discussing it, leaving the names out, we can actually move this thing forward and hopefully, fingers crossed, more and more people get involved. So tell us about these sessions.
You will always probably find us at all of the key local events that we run. That the island runs. So family events, whether it would be different kind of festivals, whether it would be the local Costa Coffee. We have lots of different venues that we will set up to actually provide an opportunity for public to stop and actually ask a question and find out a little bit more. So in terms of the next up and coming recruitment event, we've got one a drop-in session booked for Medina Leisure Centre on Friday the 15th of March. That's between 3 and 4. So if anyone is thinking about it but just wants to have an informal discussion and come up and meet with one of our members of staff, come along to that event. I mean, ultimately, there's another event we're running at Costa Coffee in Newport on the 3rd of April between 2 and 3. So again, this is just an informal opportunity for people to come, ask questions and see, put a face to the name of fostering, I guess, and find out a bit more.
Are they well attended? Do we need more to get
them? They're the main source of recruitment that we see people coming forward from. So in terms of, we looked at all of the sources of marketing that we advertise and how people can kind of get in contact with us, most of it has been through attending these events.
Brilliant. Sorry, I'll cut you off.
No, I was just going to say, and we really welcome people to come along and have those informal chats with us, even if you're not sure if it's fostering you're interested in or adoption you're interested in, or you're not really sure. There will always be a member of our staff that can explain the intricate differences between those two things. We don't mind asking lots of... There's no such thing as a silly question.
Well, I've got plenty more. You might have a...
I might have a different view.
I was going to ask, how old do you have to be to adopt? And is there a cut-off point when you get getting on a bit?
There's no maximum age. You have to be over 21, the same as Ashley said for fostering. What I would say about the age thing is it's much more important that you're healthy so that you can keep up with a child and you can carry that child, particularly for adoption, all the way through to their adulthood. So whilst age on its own isn't a barrier, we would ask you any to attend a medical to make sure that you're physically and emotionally fit and able to meet the needs of a child.
Okay. You're obviously training all the time, doing different stuff and, going away for sessions to bring yourself up to speed with new things that's happening. What about the people that are going to be adopting and fostering as well? Do they have to have some kind of training?
I can talk a bit about the fostering training. We open up fostering for people that are interested. They're invited along to something called Skills to Foster, which actually I take the lead on at the moment, but we also are helped by other carers. So they get an opportunity to meet other carers, and actually even a young person that's in care will come in and chat to them, if they want to know what makes care good for them, etc., etc. We cover all sorts of subjects because actually it can be quite a shock, some of the expectations of becoming a foster carer. You don't realise, some people might think it's just, we give them a bed and a feed and take care of them. But so children quite often come with all sorts of baggage, depending on their early life experiences.
Sure.
So we'll talk about, what sort of children come into care? What, could it be because through the parents' illness or neglect or something like that? We open up the platform and we start talking about confidentiality, for example. That might not be something you think about in your everyday life, but of course that's really important if you're becoming a foster carer. We might talk about, we do talk about safeguarding. You have to safeguard yourself, your family, and the child in care. And we do safe caring, and we talk about each individual child has a safe caring policy around them and their needs. So it's quite an extensive course, but it's informative at a level that everybody can take in and digest at first. And then we have other training, which once they become foster carers, they can go out and do and become more informed. Attachment, for example, is a very big subject with children, well, with everybody actually, but particularly with children that come into care. We touch on that in our Skills to Foster, but then we have a more robust training session on that later on. So everybody has an opportunity to keep training and upping their knowledge, really, and that helps towards the care, good care of children. And, of course, Lucy, I suppose you want to say about your adoption training as well, yeah?
I mean, adoption's very similar. So when you apply to become an adoptive parent, there are preparation groups where you meet with experienced social workers and other adoptive parents who've already been through the process, and you can have the opportunity to talk about the different needs of children that potentially are looking for forever families and learn more about the process and learn about different things like how trauma and neglect and abuse impact on a child's development and those kinds of things, so that when you're ready, as you can be, to become parents, possibly even for the first time, you're equipped to do that. And then beyond that, there are training packages for specific issues.
Your job must be so rewarding, but at the same time, you must see a lot of things that make you get upset, you know, annoy you, frustrate you. How do you deal with that?
I think a sense of humour in the team, really. Like I said earlier, I work with some really, truly amazing people. So, you know, nobody will think badly of me if I come back from a home visit and I'm upset or sad or angry about something that's happened, particularly when you watch children go through some really tough stuff. That can be a real challenge. But equally, we share in the joy. We take pleasure in the small achievements that children make and that families make, and that keeps you motivated, I think.
I'd like to also say on that point that we have really robust supervision, so that, you know, if we're carrying something that may have upset us, we can discuss it. But we're all professionals, and actually our aim at the end of the day is to keep children safe. Yeah. And I talk about that at Skills to Foster, actually, because some foster carers can take things personally when children don't react maybe quite as they expect. But we have to bear in mind those children's history and remember our job is to keep them safe. So that helps you, you know, accept quite a lot of things that you may not normally see in normal life.
Good for you. And I say, I would imagine half the time you're unsung heroes. No one really shouts about you guys, do they?
Well, no, but it's the same for foster carers. I mean, you have most of our foster carers do an absolutely incredible role and service for island children. But, you know, it's an unfortunate fact that bad news travels faster than good. And so often people, and particularly the public, if they're thinking about fostering, if they do speak to a foster carer, may not always hear the rewarding parts of it, but they are there. And I think for me personally, within my role as an assistant team manager, part of what it involves is going out and reviewing foster carers' annual approval. So a part of that is meeting with the carers, meeting with the children that have been in placement with them, and getting their views. And it's been extremely rewarding for me to actually come away and hear foster carers say that it's been an absolute pleasure looking after these children. And it does make it all worthwhile.
There are some, I know that there's a few people that foster on the island, and they do an incredible job, as do others as well, but we don't shout about them much. We don't put them on a pedestal. Sometimes we don't even know they are, but you'd like to be able to shout about them. You'd like to be able to say, hey, look, there are some kind people in the world, and hopefully that rubs off on other people too.
Absolutely.
So, but I'm guessing you're in a position where you have to kind of protect them a little bit, because you have to protect the youngsters as well that are attached.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that kind of is kind of shoots yourself in the foot a little bit, because you want to have that positive feeling, you want to have that positive vibe, and make that clear to people. Hey, look at all these people doing all these wonderful things. You don't have to be so mean spirited. You could take a leaf out of their book. And I say it's just a shame that we can't sort of highlight some of these people and the fabulous work they are. We have to wait until they get an OBE to find out who they are or something.
I think actually that's the value of having them coming to our open days, and people can drop in for chats, because then they can talk to the people who are actually doing the job. But the other side of that, of course, it's we just get on with it. And you don't realise, like Ashley said about the yearly reviews, where he looks at what they've done all year, and that's when it highlights, because it's just a job to them. They get on and do it. Yeah. But at the end of the year, when we look at, you know, children that have really come on in their education, or the health has improved, or this or that or whatever, he can then say, look, what great job. And you say, oh, yeah, I have done all that all year. But, you know, it's a job that they enjoy doing.
Would you do anything else, Ashley?
I can't imagine myself doing anything else. I do really enjoy what I do. I do have, obviously, other hobbies and things that I enjoy doing, but in terms of the rewards that I get from working in this area of work are enough to kind of see me through to continue to stay within this field.
Can I ask a personal question? If all three of you, you don't have to answer if you don't want to, but are you doing the job that you're doing because of personal experience or because, you know, you may have been adopted or fostered, or you might not be able to tell me anyway because, you know, legally, I don't know, but, you know, or is it because, hey, look, you stumbled into the job and found out, hey, hang on a minute, this is all right, I like this?
I think I speak for probably quite a few social workers that probably would say that they stumble into social work because my previous work experience has been working with children and doing some voluntary work abroad and things like that. So the main role that I had before getting into social work was as a kind of youth mentor. So I would be working with schools who have young people who are on the brink of exclusion and doing direct work with them. That was really, really rewarding, and I had actually wanted to work originally within a youth offending team, but it was only through doing the social work training and actually having a placement within children's services and actually seeing it from a different perspective and a different area of work, which had really kind of opened my eyes to something that I hadn't really considered before, and I've never looked back since. I really enjoy it.
Good for you. What about you? Same question.
I sort of stumbled into it sideways in a way, and I've got to say I don't think I'd like to do anything else. I love my job.
Excellent.
I really do. And sometimes it can be a bit, you can have low times as well when things aren't successful.
Sure.
But mostly we keep to the successes that we have, and just improving children's lives is enough.
Okay, Lucy?
Yeah, I'm going to be really boring and say the same thing, really. I stumbled into social work almost accidentally, and 15 years later I'm still here. It's a privilege and an honour to work with the families that we work with, really. I don't think I could do anything else.
Do you adopt or foster any of you, and can you?
Technically, yes, you can. There's not a reason why you can't. Personally, my parents used to be foster carers, and they were fostering at a point when I was also still living at home with my mum and dad. So I kind of seen fostering from a different side of it, and actually see the changes in the home environment in terms of the atmosphere, because it does change when you open your home to a child who's gone through some experiences that they really shouldn't have. That will manifest itself in the way that they present, because actually they've had unmet needs, and so it does change the atmosphere. And so that's what kind of led me into the fostering role that I'm in now, actually, is my original experience of seeing it from the other side.
Okay, and I'm guessing you're all the same.
Well, I think we have to be really careful to remember that being a social worker is very different to being a foster carer or an adoptive parent. And I think hats off to the foster carers. I'm not sure that I could take a child into my home, love them for a year or more or so or however long, and then wave them off and say goodbye when they're reunited with their family or move on to adoption. I just, you know, hats off to them. I'm not sure I could do it.
Okay, all right. Well, at least you're honest, eh? Shall we take a break and we'll come back, and we're going to get Oscar as well. He's being grilled by one of your teammates. Shall we mention the team member out there? What's the lady's
Charlotte.
Name?
Charlotte.
Yeah, Charlotte. Yeah. She's giving him a load of questions to come in and give you a hard time in a minute.
Oh, okay.
He's like that. He's got killer questions in it.
Awesome.
He really has. You know, stay tuned, because we'll come back with those killer questions in two ticks.
Vectis Radio. FM 104.6. The heart of the island's community.
For 25 years, we have provided friendly professional IT support to businesses, public sector, and private clients across the island. Our team of 20 IT professionals have over 325 years of accumulated experience. We are award-winning and give our customers peace of mind, which is why 99.1% of them rate the service we provide as excellent. We are the island's leading provider of IT service, consultancy, and support. Who are we? We are PC Consultants. Call us at PC Consultants on 01983 811 711 to find out more about our award-winning service.
Island Harbour presents The Breeze Restaurant and Bar. We offer a variety of delicious foods which can be enjoyed inside the recently refurbished restaurant or outside, overlooking the picturesque marina. Start your day well with something from our breakfast menu, enjoy afternoon tea with a slice of freshly made cake, or drop by for an evening meal with the family. We offer a range of tasty British classics with a choice of daily specials. Our produce is locally sourced to ensure quality and taste. The Breeze Restaurant and Bar, one of the Solent's best kept secrets. Call us today on 533-388.
Willie's Guitar Shop is a stylish guitar boutique in Cowes on the Isle of Wight. We are a small, friendly, family-owned business and sell quality vintage and pre-owned guitars. Also, accessories, strings, leads and books. In addition, we provide guitar repairs, setups, restrings and guitar lessons. We pride ourselves on our expertise and first-class customer service. You are more than welcome to pop in for a chat. We are situated at number 12 Shooters Hill in Cowes. For more details, visit our Facebook page, Willie's Guitar Shop, or telephone 01983 242680.
Most excellent!
Book now for Bad Blood at Trinity Theatre Cowes. Tom had an affair that ended in abortion. His past is about to catch up with him in a terrifying sequence of events and murder. Don't miss Bad Blood, Thursday to Saturday, March the 21st to 23rd and 28th to 30th. Book now for this action-packed drama. Tickets £8. Call 01983 295 229 or book online. chaods.org.uk. That's chaods.org.uk.
Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, has a limited number of advertising spots available. Give your business the boost it needs and reach across the island. Email our team today, marketing@vectisradio.fm.
The Mid-Morning Show is proudly sponsored by PC Consultants, the island's leading provider of IT service, consultancy and support to businesses, public sector and private clients across the island. Call us at PC Consultants on 01983 811 711 to find out more about our award-winning service.
Now, welcome back to part two. We're talking fostering and adoption. We have Ashley in, who is expert foster. What's your title? Because I'm going to rearrange the words and make it a better title, I think. Go on.
Okay, so my title is the assistant team manager.
Okay, well, that's all right so far, but yeah. You are still a social worker, is that I'm right?
So, yeah, qualified social worker.
Do you think that there's so much stigma attached to social workers that you ought to have a different title? Because I'm thinking about giving you a new one.
Well, no, there is a stigma. I'm not going to deny that, but I wouldn't... I'm proud of the role that I do, and actually, and whilst it's not one that would be seen favourably by a lot of people, I'm proud of what I do, and I enjoy what I do.
Dude.
So, you know, I'm not ashamed to say that I'm a qualified social worker and I've worked within these roles.
Do you know what? I mean, I only met you about sort of, 50 minutes ago, and you upset me because you walked in and called us another radio station, but that's fine. I've forgiven you for that. You know what I'm trying to say? When you look at, you know, the wording of things, we had someone in that was talking about mental health the other day, and I think, God, why don't we give it a different title? It's so off-putting, isn't it? And social workers in the past have had this, and you're obviously three decent people, do really good work that no one really understands, the pressures and the stuff that you have to go through, and we should be applauding you, not sort of, oh, blimmin' social workers. So I'll say we'll give you a different title. What would you like? What would you like to be referred as?
Well, I have no idea. Val, any suggestions?
Oh, I have a few, but I'm not sure whether
they need to be broadcastable, though.
Oh, of course, yes. I don't know what I'd be able to say to that. Fostering champions?
See, I like that. I like that. It's
adoption champions.
You know, a finder of families, something positive rather than, because it's, I just think we just need to just move on and just say, right, just adjust the word slightly so that we get what it really is, what it says, social worker. I mean, honestly, I just think, what do you think, Lucy? You're quite
well,
honest.
We're all pretty social and we all work really hard. Maybe it's the right term, I don't know.
You're just saying that now, aren't you?
Maybe.
Honestly, I just think if we were to just change the word, and it might, people might have a difference of opinion on what you guys do, rather than look at it negatively.
I suppose what you're saying is, in some people's minds, the first time they hear the word social worker, they immediately think negative.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
and it's so.
Understand what you're saying.
I'm getting such a positive vibe from three people that work hard, that find, you know, young kids, a family, someone for them to either be fostered or adopted and so on. And that's such a lovely thing, and it's so much more than social worker.
I think that's why we do these things, because we're so aware that picking up that phone and saying, I'd like to inquire about fostering or adoption, and you have to speak to a social worker, that could be intimidating for people. And we want to be the friendly face. You know, so you hear our voices, you see our faces, you come and meet us at these informal events, so we can knock down some of those barriers so that you can see, actually, definitely, we're all in it for the same reason, which is to get the best possible outcome and family for each child.
Okay, I've got to ask you a question. This might irritate you. I thought I'd leave it until almost the end. That building that's down over the road there with the fostering, is there some square windows and so on and so forth?
Yeah.
Is that your office?
No. We sit in County Hall.
You're in County. So what is that office all about? Because I was thinking, if that's your office, you deserve better than that. And so do the kids. Let's be honest. But I look at that and I think, come on, if that is it, look, put something up there that looks quality, actually represents what you guys do. You do a fabulous job. Don't stick things, little square things in a window, because that makes it look like, hang on a minute, how good are these guys if they only get a window like that? I mean, that's...
I think that's more about advertising, because you can see it from the road.
Yeah.
And it's just a reminder, you know, fostering is still here, if you're thinking about it.
Yeah, but that looks like from 20 years ago, and I'm thinking, are they still fostering?
Well, they might need refreshing, yeah.
Yeah, don't you think they should? You're better than that.
Well,
you're
we'll take that feedback back, won't we?
Please. I mean, just, you know, just to level things up, the regeneration team came in, and I said exactly the same thing. Your window in your shop doesn't reflect what you're doing, and that doesn't reflect the good work that you do. You deserve better, the kids deserve better as well. So I think we should get some, even if it meant that we put a call out now and get somebody to whip round their smartish and stick up a great big logo up there so that it does what it says, and people will look at that and think, do you know what, that's something I can go and support. But at the moment, just say, for instance, if you're driving by, I think you can see it from going, you know, going up the dual carriage, where you look at that and you think, crikey, that's about 20 years old, isn't it? That's, you know, do I really want to get involved in that? Well, of course you blooming well should. Mm. Have a look beyond it, but I say make some adjustments and more and more people will get involved.
Ian, you raise a really valid point. And actually what the fostering team have been doing over the last, particularly since December, we've relaunched a new branding for fostering and adoption. And that's actually to recognise the fact that we need to be keeping up with the times and make it fresh, make it look appealing and actually child friendly. So you will see when you go to events, you see the banners and things like that, you will see a new facelift, if you like, on the branding. And so it is just trying to reflect the fact that we recognise that we need to keep up with the times and to make it relationable to people, to make it real for them and actually want to invest in it.
And you can't miss us because we all wear bright orange.
Well, see, I'm colourblind, and I can see. Yeah, I can see the orange, and I can see. I'm not sure about you, Lucy. You're wearing black.
No, I am in black today.
You're in black. Specific reason? I mean, somewhere to go to in a minute.
No.
Where's the orange?
It's on my desk.
You haven't even got one of those badges, are they?
No, mine's very colourful. I wear rainbows because the reason I wear rainbows is because I think it's really important that when people approach us, children really love the rainbows, but also it signifies that we are open to diverse. And so one of the things that we're really keen to promote, if you're single, if you're married, if you're in a same-sex relationship, it doesn't matter if you're older or younger, it doesn't matter if you have a disability, come and inquire because we welcome interest from everybody.
Okay, I'm going to come back and ask you a question on that as well in a moment. But I'm just going to bring in Oscar's got some. He's been talking to your colleague out there, and he's got some killer questions. Fire away, Oscar.
What is the best and worst part of your job?
Do you want to answer individually? Or?
Yeah, who do you want to ask that one? That's Lucy there. That's Val. Do you mind being called Val? Is that
no,
right?
No,
and you've got Ashley over there. Who do you want to go first? Go for Beardy. Beardy first.
Yeah, he's the boss. Ask him.
Is he? But, go on.
I'll go first. So, for me, the best and worst parts of the job. Best parts are probably actually the people that I work with. That includes the children, the foster carers, the other social workers within the team. They are the ones that actually make the job what it is and enjoyable. The difficult parts, as with every job, there'll always be times when you have to do things that you don't want to do, and whether that would be sharing some sad news with family members, or whether it would be the more of the paperwork side of things. But ultimately, yeah, there's more of the good that outweighs the bad, if you like.
Okay.
My favourite bit is when you see a child and parent meet for the very first time. To be at that moment where a new family is formed is an utter privilege. And the saddest part of my job probably is when I come and log in and I'm family finding and I see that as of today there are over 1,000 children in the UK right now looking for an adoptive family, and we only have under 700 families approved to adopt them, and so the numbers don't stack up. So that's probably the hardest part of my job.
You must have to get through lots of tissues, won't you?
Yeah.
Because even then, I was filling up then, thinking 1,000 and only 700, and that means 300 go without.
Exactly. That's why we're here. That's why we're asking people to come forward.
Okay. We'll come back to that in a moment as well. Go on.
The best job, part of the job for me, is to see people blossom into great carers when they've attended training, when they've been supported. We have groups that they can come to, so we have for men carers, they have a group. We have foster carers lunch where they can come and have bite-sized chunks of training. There's a lunch on today and they're talking about the new missing persons, so they do little bits of information. That gives me, it makes me excited, because it just makes our team and all the people that work within it better at what they do. The worst part, bit like Lucy, it's when children come in and we have got no immediate placements for them, and we have to start looking over the country and things like that, because if only we could just recruit more people.
Sure.
And that's when we talked earlier about sending children off the island and things. That's the sad bit, and that's when you get upset.
Yeah, I would imagine so. And you mentioned there when you haven't got a space, what happens to it?
Well, I mean, again, kind of coming back to some of the statistics, I mean, just recently we've been desperately trying to recruit some foster carers that would be able to take sibling groups, because at the moment we've got two groups of siblings that we're struggling to find a place for, and we don't want to separate these siblings. We want children that are from the island to stay on the island or within their local communities. So you think the impact for children when they're removed from their families is huge, and if you're then separating siblings, which is like the last, could be one of the last sort of remaining family ties and relationships that are going to be familiar to them, it is heartbreaking. So we are desperately trying to find more foster carers to be able to meet the demand.
Can you just clarify what happens when there isn't any spaces? What happens to them?
So there are a number of challenges when you've got the more children in care than you have placements for. So there are other ways of being able to try and support that missing need, and that would be where we actually look to place children with independent providers or fostering agencies. But ultimately, if they don't have space either, because it is a national decline across not just local authorities but also with independent fostering agencies, we're just not getting enough foster carers come forward. It's in those times that you end up finding children having to be placed further and further away from their homes and their communities, which is we always try to avoid. So
come on, so we've got 8 minutes, less than 8 minutes now. This is live on Vectis Radio, FM 104.6. It'll be podcasted later. I'm hoping that lots and lots of people are listening now. Lots and lots of people will listen to the podcast later on and think, right, how can I get involved? How can I become a foster parent or an adoptive parent? How can I do that? Come on.
So we have a social media page on Facebook. If you search Isle of Wight Fostering and Adoption, we've got regular posts coming up there that's all kind of covering myth busting and giving phone numbers and contacts, and you can even inquire online if you want. The phone number is 01983 823 160, so you can pick up the phone, speak to one of our colleagues, one of our members of the team would be more than happy to kind of talk you through the process and what it involves.
Okay, and Lucy, you better chip in here because he's had a number call out as
he
well.
He has. I'm going to have to say my number again, which is 01983 823 160. Oh, I've forgotten it now. That's not good, and we're live and everything. That's terrible. 823081.
Sorry, just do that again.
823081. Have I said that right?
Yes, you have.
Oh, good.
You forgot the 0198.
Oh, thank you. I'm not often giving out the area code because I speak to local people. So.
Sure. So you, how many? Just say, for instance, how many each year parents do you have to find? Do you set yourself a target that you say, right? Okay.
No, I mean we. Again, because the demand outstrips the supply, we want as many people coming forward as possible. We'll always have sort of internal sort of targets that we would want to be working towards in terms of trying to keep up and narrow that gap. But I don't have any of the statistics in front of me. So, but in terms of, we just need more people coming forward. So please, okay. Yeah. Anyone, if you're considering, and it's actually now has never been a better time to come forward, because I mean, considering the improvements within children's services and the fact that actually we offer really competitive rates in terms of the fostering allowances that are paid to carers. So if you're thinking about fostering and you're looking at agencies or you're looking at the Isle of Wight, I would encourage you to come to the Isle of Wight. And that's one, not just because obviously I'm from the Isle of Wight, but there's another reason, because there are significant cost comparison differences between the cost of placing a child with an agency placement than with an in-house carer. Now, that's not seen by the foster carers, because we offer the competitive rates. I mean, you're talking about the cost about three times as much. So actually, if you're fostering through the local authority, this is money that is being saved for the taxpayer that will get reinvested back into local services.
See, that's why he's the manager. That's why he's the man. Thanks for that. honestly, if people want to know more, ring those numbers, go to one of those events. We'll pop it on the website a little bit later on. Oscar's got another question, I'm sure. Go on, Oscar. What's your second killer question?
Can you foster or adopt if you have a disability?
You absolutely can. Absolutely. It's really important that people with genuine life experience who have faced challenges of their own often have strengths and skills that other people who've never faced challenges have. And so we really welcome inquiries from people who have additional needs or additional experiences in other areas. But I go back to, you need to be fit enough and healthy enough to keep up with the demands of a child. And as long as you can do that, we'd be really interested in hearing from you.
Okay, you got one more question, Oscar.
Yeah.
Let's get that one done and dusted. We've only got about 4 minutes left, so come on, fire it out there.
How many children can you foster or adopt
at once? Yeah, that's a good question. Come on,
so
Ashley.
From a fostering side, the approval is generally up to three. Okay, so anyone, if you want to foster, if you've got space and capacity to be able to look after and meet the needs of three children, then that's the maximum really that you'll be approved for. There are certain circumstances when actually foster carers can go over that, and that's in case of actually we need an emergency placement, but they are only going to be temporary exemptions to that approval. Anything more than four, and then you're getting into what we call children's homes territory, which is separate than fostering.
Okay. Is there a website we can go and check it out?
Yeah,
all
again,
details?
Yep, so if you go onto the council's website, that's iow.gov.uk, and we are under the residence section. So if you go into there, there will be a link that you'll find through to the fostering and adoption pages.
Okay, and you've been there for 6 years. If somebody was to say to you, look, here's a job for life, you can stay there until you're 55 or when you want to retire, would you do it?
Within the children's services, where I'm doing,
yes,
what I'm doing now,
yeah.
I have no intention to move out of the local authority. Like I said, I thoroughly enjoy what I'm doing. I can't say what I'm going to be doing in 30, 40, 50 years, but right now I don't see any foreseeable change.
Okay, what about you, Lucy?
I'm the same.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay. And Val?
And me. I'm quite happy where I am. I just want to say about fostering families, that's a whole family that does the fostering. So we support the children of that family as well, the fostering children, as well as the fostered children well. And as long as, you know, we, like Lucy said, the door's open to almost anyone, as long as they can give the child a good home and support them properly. But they've obviously got to have a bedroom, and they've obviously got to fit in with their family as well. But we do support the families, all of the people in the families, not just mum or dad as well. I'd like to say that, because it's important that we do support them.
Thank you for
them.
Saying that. And look, thank you for what you do in our community. It's wonderful what you do, and you know, give our respect to your colleagues and the work that they do as well. And if we can help in any way, if we can assist in any way by plugging events and getting more foster carers, more adoptive parents there for you guys, because the thought of, you know, you having to say, well, sorry, we haven't got one for you, you know, that really does gut everybody, doesn't it? But I mean, if we, it's what I'm saying is, it's not just about you guys. Stop hogging it all for yourself. It's all about communities coming together. I'm pulling your leg, but it is about communities coming together and working together. And the more they know, the more they can help, possibly, but at least if they dip their toe in, they know. So thank you, Ashley, for coming in.
No problem. Thank
and,
you.
And thank you, Val.
Thank you.
Valerie.
Thank you.
And also, you're welcome. And Lucy as well. Thank you
thank
very
you.
Much for coming in. Hopefully, you're going to come back again.
Definitely.
Okay. Stand by. We've got the ladies for Thursday afternoon on the way. That's Kitty and Shazza. They are raring to go. And thank you, Oski, for those killer questions.
Vectis Radio, FM 104.6. Vectis Radio, 104.6. The heart.